Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. So we've been going through Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, a New York Times number one bestseller from 2004. What it does is go into a very deep foundational level for why we're in the kind of debt we are individually, nationally, and globally. So first, let's define this. And this is a quote from John Perkins. Economic hitmen, EHMs, are highly paid professionals who cheat countries around the globe out of trillions of dollars. They funnel money from the World Bank, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, and other foreign aid organizations into the coffers of huge corporations and the pockets of a few wealthy families who control the planet's natural resources. Their tools include fraudulent financial reports, rigged elections, payoffs, extortion, sex, and murder. They play a game as old as empire, but one that has taken on new and terrifying dimensions during this time of globalization. I should know. I was an EHM. End quote. Again, that's John Perkins. And I will continue where I left off in the last show from Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which I highly recommend that you read. The story of the march to the global empire did indeed appear to be leaking out. Not the details, not the fact that it was a tragic story of debt, deception, enslavement, exploitation, and the most blatant grab in history for the hearts, minds, souls, and resources of people around the world. Nothing in these articles hinted that the story of Iraq in 2003 was the continuation of a shameful story. Nor did they disclose that this story, as old as empire, has now taken on new and terrifying dimensions, both because of its magnitude during this time of globalization and because of the subtlety with which it is executed. Despite its shortfalls, the story did appear to be leaking out, almost reluctantly. The idea of the reluctant story leaking out hit very close to home. It reminded John of his own personal story and of the many years he had postponed telling it. He had known for a very long time that he had a confession to make. Still, he postponed making it. Thinking back, he sees that his doubts, the whisperings of guilt, were there from the beginning. They had started in Claudine's apartment even before he made the commitment to go to Indonesia on that first trip, and they had haunted him almost incessantly all the years. John also knew that had the doubts, the pain, and the guilt not constantly nagged him, he would never have gotten out. Like so many others, he would have been stuck. He would not have stood on a beach in the Virgin Islands and decided to quit Maine. Yet, he was still deferring, just as we as a culture continue to defer. These headlines seem to hint at the alliance between big corporations, international banks, and governments, but like his Maine resume, the stories barely touched the surface. It was a gloss. The real story had little to do with the fact that the major engineering and construction firms were once again receiving billions of dollars to develop a country in our image, among a people who in all likelihood had no desire to reflect that image, or that an elite band of men was repeating an age-old ritual of abusing the privileges of their high government positions. That picture is just too simple. It implies that all we need to do, if we decide to right the wrongs of the system, is to throw these men out. It feeds into the conspiracy theories and thereby provides a convenient excuse to turn on the TV and forget all about it. Comfortable in our third grade view of history, which runs, they will take care of it. The ship of state is seaworthy and will get nudged back on course. We may have to wait for the next election, but all will turn out for the best. The real story of modern empire, of the corporatocracy that exploits desperate people and is executing history's most brutal, selfish, and ultimately self-destructive resource grab, has little to do with what was exposed in the newspapers that morning and has everything to do with us. And that, of course, explains why we have such difficulty listening to the real story. We prefer to believe the myth that thousands of years of human social evolution has finally perfected the ideal economic system, rather than to face the fact we have merely bought into a false concept and accepted it as gospel. We have convinced ourselves that all economic growth benefits humankind, and that the greater the growth, the more widespread the benefits. Finally, we have persuaded one another that the corollary to this concept is valid and morally just, that people who excel at stoking the fires of economic growth should be exalted and rewarded, while those born at the fringes are available for exploitation. This concept and its corollary are used to justify all manner of piracy. Licenses are granted to rape and pillage and murder innocent people in Iran, Panama, Colombia, Iraq, and elsewhere. Economic hitmen, jackals, and armies flourish for as long as their activities can be shown to generate economic growth, and they almost always demonstrate such growth. Thanks to the biased sciences of forecasting, econometrics, and statistics, if you bomb a city and then rebuild it, the data shows a huge spike in economic growth. The real story, according to John, is that we are living a lie. Like his main resume, we have created a veneer that hides the fatal cancers beneath the surface. Those cancers are exposed by the X-rays of our statistics, which disclose the terrifying fact that history's most powerful and wealthiest empire has outrageously high rates of suicide, drug abuse, divorce, child molestation, rape, and murder, and that, like a malignant cancer, these afflictions spread their tentacles in an ever-widening radius every year. In our hearts, each of us feels the pain. We cry out for change, yet we slam our fists to our mouths, stifling those cries, and so we go unheard. It would be great if we could just blame it all on a conspiracy, but we cannot. The empire depends on the efficacy of big banks, corporations, and governments, the corporatocracy, but it is not a conspiracy. This corporatocracy is ourselves. We make it happen, which of course is why most of us find it difficult to stand up and oppose it. We would rather glimpse conspirators lurking in the shadows, because most of us work for one of those banks, corporations, or governments, or in some way are dependent on them for the goods and services they produce and market. We cannot bring ourselves to bite the hand of the master who feeds us. This was the situation John was pondering as he sat staring at the headlines on the screen of his computer, and it raised a number of questions. How do you rise up against a system that appears to provide you with your home and car, food and clothes, electricity and health care, even when you know that the system also creates a world where 24,000 people starve to death each day and millions more hate you, or at least hate the policies made by the representatives you elected? How do you muster the courage to step out of line and challenge concepts you and your neighbors have always accepted as gospel, even when you suspect that the system is ready to self-destruct? Slowly, John stood up and headed back to the house to pour himself another cup of coffee. And I'll come back to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. John took a short detour and picked up his copy of the Palm Beach Post, lying near the mailbox outside his driveway. It had the same Bechtel Iraq article, copyrighted by the New York Times. By now, he noticed the date on the masthead, April 18. It is a famous date, at least in New England, instilled in him by his Revolutionary War-minded parents and Longfellow's poem. Quote, "Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year." Close quote. This year, Good Friday happened to fall on the anniversary of Paul Revere's ride. Seeing that date on the front page of the Post made John think of the colonial silversmith racing his horse through the dark streets of New England towns, waving his hat and shouting, "The British are coming!" Revere had risked his life to spread the word, and loyal Americans responded. They stopped the empire back then. John wondered what had motivated them, why those colonial Americans were willing to step out of line. Many of the ringleaders had been prosperous. What had inspired them to risk their businesses, to bite the hand that fed them, to risk their lives? Each of them undoubtedly had personal reasons, and yet there must have been some unifying force, some energy or catalyst, a spark that ignited all those individual fires at that single moment in history. And then it came to John. Words. The telling of the real story about the British Empire and its selfish and ultimately self-destructive mercantile system had provided that spark. The exposure of the underlying meaning through the words of men like Tom Paine and Thomas Jefferson fired the imaginations of their countrymen, opened hearts and minds. The colonists began to question, and when they did, they discovered a new reality that cut away at the deceits. They discerned the truth behind the patina, understood the way the British Empire had manipulated, deceived, and enslaved them. They saw that their English masters had formulated a system and then had managed to convince most people of a lie, that it was the best system mankind could offer, that the prospects for a better world depended on channeling resources through the King of England, that an imperial approach to commerce and politics was the most efficient and humane means of helping the majority of the people, when in fact the truth was that the system enriched only a very few at the expense of the many. This lie and the resulting exploitation endured and expanded for decades until a handful of philosophers, businessmen, farmers, fishermen, frontiersmen, writers, and orators began to speak the truth. Words. John thought about their power as he refilled his cup, walked back to his office, and returned to the computer. He logged off the CNN website and brought up the file he had been working on the night before. He read the last paragraph he had written. Quote, "This story must be told. We live in a time of terrible crisis and tremendous opportunity. The story of this particular economic hitman is the story of how we got to where we are and why we currently face crises that seem insurmountable. This story must be told because only by understanding our past mistakes will we be able to take advantage of future opportunities. Most important, this story must be told because today, for the first time in history, one nation has the ability, the money, and the power to change all this. It is the nation where I was born and the one I served as an EHM, the United States of America. Close quote. This time, John would not stop. The coincidences of his life and the choices he had made around them had brought him to this point. John would move forward. He thought again of that other man, that lone rider galloping through the dark New England countryside, shouting out his warning. The silversmith knew that the words of pamphleteers, even before Paine, preceded him, that people had read those words in their homes and discussed them in the taverns. Paine would point out the truth about the tyranny of the British Empire. Jefferson would proclaim that our nation was dedicated to the principles of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And Revere, riding through the night, understood that men and women throughout the colonies would be empowered by words. They would rise up and fight for a better world. Words. John made his decision to stop procrastinating, to finish finally what he had started so many times over all those years, to come clean, to confess, to write words in his book. We have arrived at the end of John's book and also at a beginning. You are probably wondering where to go next, what you can do to stop the corporatocracy and to end this insane and self-destructive march to global empire. You are ready to leave the book behind and pounce on the world. You want ideas, and John can offer you some. He could point out that the chapters we have read about Bechtel and Halliburton in Iraq, for example, are old news. By the time you have heard it, it may seem redundant. However, the significance of those newspaper articles goes far beyond the timeliness of their content. The chapters, he hopes, will change the way you view the news, help you to read between the lines of every newspaper article that comes before you, and to question the deep implications of every radio and television report you tune into. Things are not as they appear. NBC is owned by General Electric, ABC by Disney, CBS by Viacom, and CNN is part of the huge AOL Time Warner conglomerate. Most of our newspapers, magazines, and publishing houses are owned and manipulated by gigantic international corporations. Our media is part of the corporatocracy. The officers and directors who control nearly all our communications outlets know their places. They are taught throughout life that one of the most important jobs is to perpetuate, strengthen, and expand the system they have inherited. They are very efficient at doing so, and when opposed, they can be ruthless. So the burden falls on you to see the truth beneath the veneer and to expose it. Speak it to your family and friends. Spread the word. John offers a list of practical things to do. For instance, cut back on your oil consumption. In 1990, before we first invaded Iraq, we imported 8 million barrels of oil. By 2003 and the second invasion, this had increased more than 50% to over 12 million barrels. The next time you are tempted to go shopping, read a book instead, exercise, or meditate. Downsize your home, wardrobe, car, office, and most everything else in your life. Protest against free trade agreements and against companies that exploit desperate people in sweatshops or that pillage the environment. And I'll return to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. John could tell you that there is great hope within the current system, that there is nothing inherently wrong with banks, corporations, and governments, or with the people who manage them, and that they certainly do not have to compose a corporatocracy. He could go into detail about how the problems confronting us today are not the result of malicious institutions. Rather, they stem from fallacious concepts about economic development. The fault lies not in the institutions themselves, but in our perceptions of the manner in which they function and interact with one another, and of the role their managers play in that process. In fact, those highly effective worldwide communications and distribution networks could be used to bring about positive and compassionate changes. Imagine if the Nike swoosh, McDonald's arches, and Coca-Cola logo became symbols of companies whose primary goals were to clothe and feed the world's poor in environmentally beneficial ways. This is no more unrealistic than putting a man on the moon, breaking up the Soviet Union, or creating the infrastructure that allows those companies to reach every corner of the planet. We need a revolution in our approach to education to empower ourselves and our children to think, to question, and to dare to act. You can set an example. Be a teacher and a student. Inspire everyone around you through your example. John could encourage you to take specific actions that will impact the institutions in your life. Speak out whenever any forum presents itself. Write letters and emails. Phone in questions and concerns. Vote for enlightened school boards, county commissions, and local ordinances. When you must shop, do it consciously. Get personally involved. John could remind you of what the Shuars told him in 1990, that the world is as you dream it, and that we can trade in that old nightmare of polluting industries, clogged highways, and overcrowded cities for a new dream based on earth-honoring and socially responsible principles of sustainability and equality. It is within our power to transform ourselves, to change the paradigm. John could enumerate the amazing opportunities we have available to us for creating a better world right now. Enough food and water for everyone, medicines to cure diseases and to prevent epidemics that needlessly plague millions of people today, transportation systems that can deliver life's essentials to even the most remote corners of the planet, the ability to raise literacy levels and to provide internet services that can make it possible for every person on the planet to communicate with every other person. Tools for conflict resolution that could render wars obsolete. Technologies that explore both the vastness of space and the most minute subatomic energy, which could then be applied to developing more ecologic and efficient homes for everyone. Sufficient resources to accomplish all of the above and much more. John could suggest steps for you to take immediately to help others understand the crises and the opportunities. 1. Offer study groups about Confessions of an Economic Hitman at your local bookstore or library or both. A guideline for doing this is available at www.johnperkins.org. 2. Develop a presentation for a nearby elementary school on your favorite subject. Sports, cooking, ants, almost anything, and use it to help students wake up to the true nature of the society they are inheriting. And 3, send emails to all the addresses in your file, expressing feelings triggered by his book and other books you read. But John suspects you have already thought of most of these things. You just need to pick a couple that most appeal to you and do them, and to realize that all of these are part of a much greater commitment that you and all of us must take. We must commit ourselves absolutely and unequivocally to shaking ourselves and everyone around us awake. We must hear the wisdom of the prophecies, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities, become conscious, and then take action. John says that his book is not a prescription. It is a confession, pure and simple. It is a confession of a man who allowed himself to become a pawn, an economic hitman, a man who bought into a corrupt system because it offered so many perks and because buying in was easy to justify, a man who knew better but who could always find excuses for his own greed, for exploiting desperate people, and pillaging the planet. A man who took full advantage of the fact that he was born into one of the wealthiest societies history has ever known, and who also could pity himself because his parents were not at the top of the pyramid. A man who listened to his teachers, read the textbooks on economic development, and then followed the example of other men and women who legitimize every action that promotes global empire, even if that action results in murder, genocide, and environmental destruction. A man who trained others to follow in his footsteps. It is John Perkins' confession. The fact that you have listened to this book indicates that you can relate on some personal level to John's confession, that you and he share a lot in common. You may have traveled different roads, but you have driven similar vehicles, used the same fuels, and stopped to eat at restaurants owned by the same corporations. For John, confessing was an essential part of his personal wake-up call. Like all confessions, it is the first step toward redemption. "Now it is your turn," he says. "You need to make your own confession. When you come clean on who you are, why you are here during this time in history, why you have done the things you have, the ones you are proud of, and those others, and where you intend to go next, you will experience an immediate sense of relief. It may be nothing less than euphoric." John says, "Believe me when I say that writing my book has been deeply emotional and often a painful and humiliating experience. It has been frightening in a way nothing I have ever faced before has been frightening. But it has opened me to a sense of relief I have never known until now, a feeling I can only describe as ecstatic." End quote. Ask yourself these questions. What do I need to confess? How have I deceived myself and others? Where have I deferred? Why have I allowed myself to be sucked into a system that I know is unbalanced? What will I do to make sure our children, and all children everywhere, are able to fulfill the dream of our founding fathers, the dream of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? What course will I take to end the needless starvation and make sure there is never again a day like September 11th? How can I help our children understand that people who live gluttonous, unbalanced lives should be pitied but never ever emulated, even if those people present themselves through the media they control as cultural icons and try to convince us that penthouses and yachts bring happiness? What changes will I commit to making in my attitudes and perceptions? What forums will I use to teach others and to learn more on my own? These are the essential questions of our time. Each of us needs to answer them in our own way and to express our answers clearly, unequivocally. Paine and Jefferson and all the other patriots are watching over our shoulders. Their words continue to inspire us today. The spirits of those men and women who left their farms and fishing boats and headed out to confront the mighty British Empire, and of those who fought to emancipate the slaves during the Civil War, and of those who sacrificed their lives to protect the world from fascism, speak to us. And we will continue with an update on The Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins in the next show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt-manageable life.